Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
George Payton, new general manager for the Denver Broncos, popped on the broadcast on Saturday evening, talking with Brian Griese and Steve Levy.
Taking John's role. John used to do that.
Yes.
Final preseason game. Always kind of give you a rundown of camp and how things were looking.
Yeah, big picture stuff. I remember the one year he said with Paxton, John said, like, this is kind of what they expected. They, like, it was going to take a couple years.
Yeah.
In reality, it was like the year before you're saying, hey, we need to microwave this development. Like,
right.
Let's do this.
It was back when John knew when camp was right around the corner.
That's right. And if those maybe missed it and didn't understand that reference, 2 days after camp had began, John had a tweet that said, hey, love this time of year, training camp right around the corner. It's like, oh, no, we've all been here for a couple days.
We passed that corner already.
The Broncos are playing. George, in his appearance, kind of, I think, gave you a snapshot of the organizational goal here in 2021. Listen to this.
Not going to lie, we're getting a number of calls. Yeah. You know, corners are a premium, obviously, in this league, and we have some good depth, so it's been good.
Okay, that was about the corners. Do we have the other clip? So that is something else we did learn, though. We can put it in park here for a second. He said, like, I think it was Steve Levy who said, hey, like, you got a lot of depth at corner. You got to be fielding some calls, aren't you? And he says, as you just heard, I'm not going to lie, we are.
Well, I'm sure he's getting calls, but for sure they're not going to trade one, right? Because Vic Fangio told us you can never have enough corners. So if you trade one, then you're admitting you had too many corners because they justified signing two corners and then drafting a corner with a number 9 overall pick with you can't have enough corners.
My guess is they're not trading any corner.
I don't think they are either.
But here's the clip that we originally intended. This is George Payton talking about what the goal is this year.
I think it's important to be relevant. You know, we need to get off to a good start. I believe we're 0-7 the last 3 years in September, so it's really imperative we get off to a good start. And when you get off to a good start, you tend to be relevant in November and December. So I think it's really important. You know, the goal hasn't changed. Obviously, you know, in our locker room, we have higher goals, but, you know, we just need to be relevant, you know.
Three different uses of the word relevant.
We just need to be relevant, you know.
Well, and it's the exact same thing he said at the media barbecue the day before training camp. We want to play relevant games in November and December. So, okay, first of all, as a longtime fan of the team, somebody who's been watching this team since, going to games since 1979, this makes me want to just pound my head against this table, right? Like, the goal here is not to be relevant. That is not what the standard is here. When Pat Bowlen was here, he used to jokingly always predict, and Woody Page would write it, that they're going to go 19-0.
Yep.
But it was Super Bowl or bust was the implication. Now, not every year were they a true contender, but that was the expectation. So this drives me crazy that now it's, hey, we want to be relevant in November, December. This reeks of the Minnesota Vikings, where, hey, we haven't been to a Super Bowl since 1976, but by gosh, we played some really interesting games after Halloween. Like, that's not what we're looking for here. Now, I can look at it, though, objectively and say, well, that would be a step in the right direction because they haven't played a relevant game in November, December since VJ was 6-6. They were playing relevant games in December. They lost all four of them, missed the playoffs, and he got fired. But that was the last time, so that was 2018. Yes. So they have not played a relevant game in November, December, under Vic Fangio. That is true. That is true. So that it would be a step in the right direction. But boy, I hate to hear him say that publicly that's our goal. I just don't like that at all.
And he was emphatic about it.
Three times.
Said it three separate times.
You didn't misspeak when you said it three times.
No.
And you're repeating what you said a month ago.
Right. This tells me, though, like, this tells me, this is why, this is part of the reason why it gets tied all the way back, that it is my belief that the Denver Broncos were never going to draft a quarterback in George Payton's first year. Because when you do that, you are accepting that you may take some lumps here. you may take some lumps. And when he drafted Patrick Surtain, what was the words that came out of his mouth? He said, he's the safest player in the draft.
Yeah.
I believe that that was the strategy, that in his first year, he was not going to kick the door down to the Denver Broncos. He was going to slowly open it, observe, listen, understand what situation he's in, and then go from there. I don't believe that he was, in it, like if Trey Lance had fallen, I just don't believe that, oh, it was Trey they really liked. I can't go there. And I think that soundbite is part of the goal here. So let's just get off the bottom and then go from there.
Okay, which I can understand that approach. And, you know, we've all worked at places where a new boss comes in and it's just a tornado, and they're making changes. Like, you haven't even figured out, like, where the paperclips are. What are we doing here? Right? Like, so you don't want to come in and just be out of control. But by the same token, you should be able to come in and look at it and say, well, quarterback is the most important position in sports, and this is a team that hasn't had a quarterback since 2015. We probably ought to address that situation, because he wanted to. He tried to, supposedly, with Matthew Stafford and Deshaun Watson. So you still got to look at it and say, well, if I can't get a veteran, maybe I should get a rookie who can come in here and turn into that. Like, I think you could have looked at the big picture and not totally audited the season, which I feel like he's kind of auditing the season in an effort to give Vic Fangio the best chance to save his job, which I don't quite understand why that's the goal if I'm the GM of the team.
Well, it you know, the whole dynamic, I talked about this with Schlereth last week, is like the disjointed nature of the Broncos right now. It is like we don't know who the owner is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We likely will have a new one this time next year. The GM is his first year on the job and his first time doing the job. The head coach is on the hot seat, and things just aren't lined up right now for the Broncos. It does feel like, to a certain degree, it is about getting off the bottom and also getting through this year and really next season getting more in sync just as a franchise, like having a lead voice at the top of the organization in an owner, getting a new quarterback in here. I don't believe either Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Locke's going to be the starting quarterback week one, 2022. Although there is a scenario where that could happen if the Broncos are 9-8 and are baited just enough to keep going down that road under the belief that to think that that couldn't happen is naive.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the reasons why 9-8 is terrifying, because they could convince themselves that Vic Fangio's the right guy and that Teddy Bridgewater's the right guy.
Yeah, that is a scenario that's in play. It does feel like it's about, just like I said, being relevant, and then 1 year from now you'll see his fingerprints more on the organization. Talking about George Payton.
Yeah, but I think in the disjointed aspect of this franchise is totally right. They're all over the board. No, nothing is in sync. But I do think the overall bigger problem is the same problem they've had the last 5 years, thinking they're in win-now mode. All right? So if you're constantly in win-now mode, you never take the time to look at the big picture. It's always, how do we win on Sunday, and how do we win this season? I get it. It's professional sports. You're competitive. You always want to win. But Jimmy Johnson, in his first year as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, was 1-15. Like, they took a step backward, but they got rid of some of the bad apples and were resetting the culture and, you know, stockpiling draft picks and trading away Herschel Walker and doing those things that laid the groundwork for winning 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, 2 of which Jimmy was the head coach for. That's the part of it. At some point, you do have to sacrifice the short term for the long term. And nobody, whether it's John Elway, Vic Fangio, Vance Joseph, George Payton, who's ever the trust or whoever's making, nobody seems to be willing to force this organization to go down that path. That's why it's Groundhog Day. That's why every season starts with Sonny and Cher singing "I Got You, Babe" at 6 a.m. It's the same thing over and over and over again, because they're in win-now mode, and they're delusionally in win-now mode. Like, win what? Could you get to 9 wins? Sure. Would it shock me if this team goes 9-8? Nope. Would it shock me if they play relevant games in November, December, and, you know, George Payton is calling Mayor Hancock and thinking that's supposed to get a parade here? No, that wouldn't shock me at all. But you're not going to be a contender. You're not on the path to being a contender. So it's win what? That would be my question.
James Merrillat is filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Speaking of next season, a former Bronco legend is calling his shot at the quarterback position, and it may be music to Broncos country's ears. Got a piece of audio that you have to hear coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
A former Broncos legend is calling his shot at the most important position in all of sports. Shannon freaking Sharp. One of a kind is Shannon, is he not? He is a one of one. And this past week on the Undisputed, right? He and Skip Bayless going back and forth, and Shannon ultimately landed on a proclamation. Check this out.
Skip, look, all this is just a one-year failure, because you know I'm coming next year.
You really believe that?
Yeah, I believe it.
At age 38.
With all my heart and soul.
Really, at age 38, Aaron Rodgers is going to save the day in Denver, Colorado.
Oh, hold on. Hey, Manny saved the day in Tampa at 43.
Yeah.
So you mean to tell me Aaron Rodgers can't save the day at 38?
Tom Brady did.
I mean, yeah. You're scared. Yeah. Tom Brady saved the day.
Mm. Well, that's a freak of nature.
Hey, well, we got a freak of nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, watch him come throw 40-plus touchdowns for us.
I think he wants none of that pressure.
I think he wants all that pressure.
He'd walk in the door and they'd say, we got Peyton Manning.
We have. Next best thing.
Mm.
Super Bowl, here we come. We're going to the playoff this year. Mm. You know what, Skip Bayless? I feel
maybe real. You should just stick with Teddy KGB.
You know what I feel? I feel real comfortable, Skip Bayless. I'm going to give you the same bet that I gave old Carl Lee Booker it off the hook. I bet you we have a better record than y'all.
Who?
The Denver Broncos gonna have a better record than the Dallas Cowboys. That who? You ain't gonna who? You ain't no ow.
I'll take that.
Yeah, I'll take it here. Who cares it right
done.
Now?
Done.
Got it.
Thank you.
Got it.
I mean, you ain't no owl.
Yeah, who? You ain't no owl.
Oh my God, that is priceless audio. But what do you make of the assertion? Look, you know, Shannon's connected. Shannon talks to a lot of guys. I don't think Shannon's just spewing off. I think that he has maybe heard some of the things that Mark Schlereth has heard.
Yeah. I think it's within the realm of possibilities. I think it's more likely than not that Aaron Rodgers, is not in Green Bay in 2022. Okay. So that puts him on the market. The Broncos were one of the teams that allegedly were in the mix this year. Now, it was late in the kind of the cycle here, so there was less teams that could be interested. If all of a sudden he's on the market in February and March and people are starting talking trades, there's going to be a lot of teams before free agency and before the draft that are in on, hey, we think Aaron Rodgers can put us over the hump. So that makes it more difficult. But I always get a little skeptical of this because, I mean, think about this year. Aaron Rodgers is going to be available. Russell Wilson's unhappy in Seattle. Deshaun Watson wants out in Houston. All three of them are still currently with those teams.
Yeah.
Like, we hear this stuff all the time. So could they patch it up in Green Bay? Sure. They win a Super Bowl. They're going to let Aaron Rodgers leave, and he's going to leave a Super Bowl team? Okay. I'll believe that when I see it. I would love it to happen. Could it be just like, you know, Teddy is Tim Tebow and gets his team to, you know, borderline fringe playoff team and makes Aaron Rodgers think, just like Peyton Manning, hey, yeah, if I came in there, I can get him over the hump. We can win 12 games immediately. Sure, I can see that happening, but that's not a plan. It's a hope. It's a dream. It's maybe not even a pipe dream, but it's still a dream. You can't have that be your plan. So if it all turns out that way, I don't want to have a bunch of revisionist historians saying, man, George was playing chess when everybody else was playing checkers. Unless the agreement is in place now, they're just not telling anybody.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think that is crazy. I don't think it's unreasonable. Is it?
Maybe not.
Could you say
not?
Improbable? Maybe. But there has been so much smoke here. And Rodgers himself, I mean, you know, came out with it in that first press conference. I mean, this was a real thing. I just don't think it's that crazy. And I think that the added element of you have a new love in your life, that love, lives in Colorado. And I think that, you know, people I think are dismissive of that. I don't think that it's crazy to suggest that that is at least an element of the conversation.
And I'm probably just reluctant to let myself believe it because I fell for it on draft night and started imagining it when Mark Schlereth told us that Aaron Rodgers was coming to the Broncos.
There we go. He did it.
Yeah,
that feel good?
It does. It does. You know, I missed out on the legal ID.
Yeah.
But I got that one.
You did.
It's the first time I've done it, the smear campaign. I had some fun. I was on with Mark on Friday and smeared him on his own show.
Wow, that's...
That
ballsy.
I actually didn't feel great doing it in front of him. I'll be honest with you. But he's so great. He's like, go for it. Yeah, look, I'll say this. This is going to be a conversation until it's not.
Yeah.
Like we have fun with Mark because we say we're going to do this until a solution is found at the quarterback position.
There's only two ways, I think, well, three, if that this does not become a conversation. One, Aaron Rodgers stays in Green Bay, then it's not a conversation. But I don't think Teddy Bridgewater can do anything to where this would not be a part of the conversation. I think if they go 9-8, I think they go 10-7, I still think people look at Teddy Bridgewater and say he's not the long-term answer. So I don't think Teddy can be the answer. I do think they could be so bad and somebody in college football this year plays so well that the Broncos are sitting there at 1, 2, or 3 and everybody's saying, like a year ago right now, was anybody talking about Zach Wilson?
No.
No.
Nope.
So could that happen again this year and then the Broncos are sitting in the spot the Jets were in and then it's like, yeah, they don't need to worry about Aaron Rodgers. They're going to draft whatever next year's Zach Wilson is. I can see that happening. There's also, and this is going to sound crazy, there is also the scenario where Drew Lock comes back in and saves the day and takes this conversation away. Now, I think that's the least likely of the scenarios.
Okay.
But that is an option. There's
so like the 2019 on steroids.
Yeah.
Like where it's not 4-1, it's Teddy ultimately is it just it's in front of everyone. You gotta make a change. This offense needs a spark.
Yep.
Drew comes back in. Hold on, let me get my tinfoil hat on. Okay, there it is. Drew comes back in and has a 3-1 touchdown interception ratio, goes 8-2.
Yeah. Yeah, they're 3-4 or 4-3, and Teddy's got a, you know, bum shoulder or something, and they're averaging 19 points a game, and, you know, they're winning 2017, losing 2017. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of every other week. And Drew has to play, and it just takes off.
Here comes Drew.
It could happen. Now, again, just for the record, so I get it out there, it's the least likely scenario. I think the most likely scenario is everybody's dreaming about Aaron Rodgers still. Not that it's going to happen, but that's the plan and what everybody wants. I think there's a college player out there who's going to turn into this year's Zach Wilson that everybody's salivating over in the draft.
Sam Howell, University of North Carolina.
There you go. Could be that. And then I think the third option is Drew Lock comes back in, rides in on the white horse and saves the day.
Mm.
That's a scenario. Those are the three ways it's going to go leading into next year. I just don't see one where, if Teddy Bridgewater gets them in the playoffs and they win a couple of games, okay, maybe, but like, what are the odds of that happening? That's less likely than Drew Lock rolling in.
I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's crazy. I had someone reach out on Twitter. I put up a tweet saying the Broncos are favored in more than half of their games. And who was it here? Because I want to give him a shout. He's a good follower. Bill. I like Bill. He says, so why won't anyone be bold and say Broncos will win 11 games and win a playoff game? Bill, because I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen.
You want to know why? Tell me the game in the last 2 years, in the Vic Fangio era, that the Broncos weren't supposed to win and won.
Patriots last year.
Maybe. Okay, I'll give you that one.
I think
that
got filed. I think, was it a short week? Was that a Thursday night?
It was the game that got screwed up because of COVID and things got moved around and they missed their bye week.
That's right.
Yeah, and they went up and won with 6 field goals.
That's like, right, 18-12. The War of 18-12.
Yes.
18, okay. 18, all, Nick Manus was special teams player of the week, I think, that week. You like that one, Rishi? War of 18-12.
I think at the time, it definitely qualified as they weren't supposed to win this game. In hindsight,
yeah.
It wasn't that big of an accomplishment.
Yeah, and that started to age more and more poorly as the season went on.
But at the time, I'll give you that. But if you're favored to win 9 games, it shouldn't be a stretch to say they're going to win 10, 11 games. You got to win one or two games you're not supposed to. That's not what Vic Fangio has done during his time here. That would be why people don't want to make that leap. Because in the other games, the games they're not favored in, who are they going to beat? They're going to beat the Chiefs? Like you start going through those games and start going through that schedule,
the games where they're not going to be favored, when they're not playing the Jets, the Eagles, the Bengals, the Lions, the Jaguars,
the Ravens.
Right.
Yeah, well, here's the games where, you know what, let's save this, because I want to save this for a segment, because I would like to go through the schedule and because, like, there's a game where right now, week 14, Broncos are favored by over a touchdown. Like, when was the last against the Lions? Like, when was the last time Broncos were favored by over a touchdown? So, all right, we'll circle back to that conversation tomorrow. We all understand that it is the preseason, but the Broncos did something in all three games that I think is noteworthy, and we'll take a dive into it next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
We all understand it's the preseason. I mean, we've been having caveats for each of these performances, but, you know, this, that, we got it. But under that umbrella, with the understanding of that context, the Broncos did something in all three games that I think is noteworthy. Broncos didn't allow a single touchdown in three games. How do you quantify that? How do you look at it?
I wouldn't say it's meaningless. I think that would be unfair to totally dismiss it and say it doesn't matter at all. It's preseason games. And, you know, we can all find the examples of, I believe, the Browns who went winless and the Lions who went winless. Both were undefeated in their preseasons before going 0-16.
VJ's 5-11 team was 4-0.
Yeah. So, the record doesn't matter. And I haven't gone back to look at the Browns 4-0 preseason and the Lions 4-0 preseasons, but it's not about the record. It's kind of about how you get there. And the Broncos were they were dominant in two games, and their defense was really, really good in all three games. They didn't give up a single touchdown. I don't care who you're playing against. Like, yeah, when it's the ones against the other team's backup offensive players, you shouldn't give up a touchdown. But later in those games, it's kind of, borderline garbage time for everybody. You'd think at some point you'd have a defensive breakdown and give up a deep throw or something, right? Or you would think, just there'd be some issue. Somebody would, you'd miss a tackle and somebody break free for a long run. And, they're all trying to make rosters too. They may be down on the depth chart, but that they're also going out there and, playing to the nth degree in the fourth quarter of preseason games because they're trying to get onto the club. So it's not meaningless. I think it's encouraging. I think it's something that makes you feel better going into week one than had they gone 0-3 and not scored an offensive touchdown.
Right.
We'd be panicked.
Right.
So if that causes panic, the flip side can't be, no big deal.
Right.
You have to give it some credence and be encouraged by it a little bit, but it's not something that makes me want to, run to the desert and put in a futures.
Right. Right.
Wager.
But you can't get better than that.
No.
You can't give up negative touchdowns. It can only be zero.
Right.
And that's what it was after three football games. So it's something to kind of put in our pockets, moving forward. Although I will say this, on Saturday night against the Rams, there was a couple drives where the starting defense was out there and the Rams second stringers, Perkins and company, was moving the football on them. Two separate drives, pull it up here. It was, the first drive of the game was a 3-and-out, but then it was an 11 play, 60 yard drive, 11 play, 40 something yard, drive that both resulted in points.
Yeah, but as Vic told us, that's because of the kick return, and then there was a face mask penalty, and then, they threw a screen pass. I mean, it's not a real football play. I mean, they didn't really drive on our defense. Like, that's where the whole special teams conversation came from, was Vic Fangio explaining away how his defense, first team defense, gave up an 11 play scoring drive to the Rams backups. It was all about excuse making and it turned into he's chucking Tom McMahon and the special teams under the bus. That's not what it started off as. It was Vic Fangio in excuse mode, point the finger mode.
Well,
period. No excuses.
We have seen Vic do that from time to time during his 2 years. We will obviously continue to, have this thing under a magnifying glass here. Something that I wanted to just in passing kind of address is this story with the New York Mets. Javi Baez. Like, all right, so the Mets were not playing well. The Mets were just, it looked like they had two left feet, all right? And the fans, upset, were booing the underperforming New York Mets. Javi Baez is now booing the fans. The Mets players are seen doing thumbs down to the fans when something good happens. So when they're it's like their moment to shine, they are booing their own fans who booed them when they were underperforming. This is Javi Baez postgame.
This is the boo that we get. We're not machines. We're gonna struggle. You know, we're gonna struggle 7 times out of 10. And you know, it just feels bad when we strike out. When I strike out and I get booed, you know, it doesn't really get to me. But like, I want to let them know that when we success, we're gonna do the same thing to let them know how it feels. You know, because if we win together, then we gotta lose together. You know, and the fans are really a big part of it. So. In my case, they gotta be better. You know, I play for the fans and I love the fans, but if they're gonna do that, they're just putting more pressure on the team, and that's not what we want.
So, is that a thumbs down to fans then?
Well, yeah. I mean, to let them know that when we don't get success, we're gonna get booed. So they're gonna get booed when we success.
When we don't get success, we're going to get booed. So they, the fans, are going to get booed when we do have success. This is one of the softest things that I can recall in professional sports. And I tweeted this, like, these guys are so sensitive. When you don't have callus on your hands, little things prick and pierce you.
Absolutely.
You were underperforming at your job that you make millions of, and you heard about it. You heard that you were underperforming. And, like, welcome to the world. You talk about, like, just a lack of perspective. I was just like shaking my head at this story.
It's like someone complaining that water flows downhill. Like this is how it works. You're making $11 million to play baseball. They're in the stands paying money, which helps pay your $11 million to be entertained. If you're not doing a good job at your job, they're going to boo you. You don't get paid to do something and boo the people who are paying you to do it. That's wanting water to run uphill. That's what he's asking for. It's just not the way it works. Like, does it stink to get booed? I'm sure it does. And everybody's, you know, going to say, they make a lot of money. I just did. That doesn't erase the fact that you're a human being and it still probably stinks to get booed.
Sure.
I get it. But you also have to have a little perspective and just know how the world works. Like, he's kind of trying to ask for sports physics to be reversed here,
right?
And it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. Like, there's no other way to describe it other than just like, well, Javi, welcome to the real world, man.
Right.
Like, you're playing in New York too. Like, that's how it's gonna be.
Right. I mean, what a hilarious story. And it's not just Javi. He's got other Mets now joining in. They're booing their crowd. It's just so weird to see the image of it. Like, looking at the fans doing thumbs down to the fans, just like, bizarro world.
For sure. Is Javi Baez, isn't he the one that, remember when Nolan Arenado had that awkward play at third base where you didn't know whether to tag him and it kind of turned into a hug in the wild card game in Chicago? Was that Javi Baez?
I forget. I honestly forget.
I think it was.
Okay.
I'm not connecting any dots here. I'm just saying it's two guys who have total lack of perspective on how the real world works.
Way to get in a Nolan shot here.
They bumped into each other on the baseball team.
They won.
Yes.
We got nothing but fair campaign.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Literally still have the Benedict Arnold jersey hanging here in our studio. The Rockies, man, hell froze over.
Yeah.
Winning a series in L.A. They won 4-2 Friday night and 5-0 yesterday. I've been saying this for a few weeks. This team has a little bit of charm to it, a little bit of fight.
Yeah, they're not, they're not good, but they're not blow it up and start over bad, right? They have some pieces to where if Bill Schmidt or whoever becomes their GM in the offseason.
Bill Schmidt.
Plays his cards right? And you have to upgrade a closer. Daniel Bard, neat story, but he's not the long-term answer. You got to get probably a couple of positional players, like Charlie Blackman's on his last leg. You need to get an outfielder, but those kind of things. It's not mission impossible. It's not as though we're looking at it and saying they don't have any starting pitching. They got a pretty good rotation, and if you have that, you can piece things together and put together a roster that can contend. The fact that they're 60-70, it's exceeding expectations.
It is. Think about that sentence. They're 60-70. Way better than you thought.
We all thought they were going to lose 100 games. If they go 1-31, I guess if they go 2-32 down the stretch, they would lose 100 games. Is that right? No,
yeah,
2-30. They have to go 2-30. Good math by me at the end of the show. 2-30. Otherwise, they're going to not lose 100 games. I think that's a step in the right direction. That's actually avoiding what all of us thought was going to happen.
Another amazing sentence. All right. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thanks. It was fun.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. Shout out Richie behind the glass. We step aside for The Drive coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.